ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. Continuation from the chapter, Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers. This is text number 45. Yanmatunadi grihamedik sukam hitucham. Yan mai tu nari griha medi sukam hitucham. Kandu yanena karayo eva dukkha dukkham. Trityanti neha kripa baho dukkha bhaja. Kandu divan manasi jam visaheta dhiraha. Translation. So Prahlad Maharaj is speaking. Sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Grihamedis, the so-called grihastas, who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of distress. The kripanas, the fools who are just the opposite of the brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. Those who are dhira, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching, are not subjected to the sufferings of fools and rascals. Even Prahlad Maharaj says fools and rascals. So Prabhupada is bona fide when he says that. So. Purport. Materialists think that sexual indulgence is the greatest happiness in this material world, and therefore they make elaborate plans to satisfy their senses, especially the genitals. This is generally found everywhere, specifically found in the Western world, where there are regular arrangements to satisfy sex life in different ways. Actually, however, this has not made anyone happy. Even the hippies, who have given up all the material comforts of their fathers and grandfathers, cannot give up the sensational happiness of sex life. Such persons are described here as kripana, or misers. The human form of life is a great asset, for in this life one can fulfill the goal of all existence. Unfortunately, however, because of a lack of education and culture, people are victimized by false happiness of sex life. Prahlad Maharaj therefore advises, one, not to be misled by the civilization of sense gratification, and especially not by sex life. Rather, one should be sober, avoid sense gratification, and be Krishna conscious. The lusty person, who is compared to a foolish miser, never gets happiness by sense gratification. The influence of material nature is very difficult to surpass, but as stated by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 7:14, mam eva ye papadyante mayam eta tarantite. If one voluntarily submits to the lotus feet of Krishna, he can be saved very easily. In reference to low-grade happiness of sex life, Jamunacharya has in this connection said, Yavadi mamma chitta Krishna padada vinde navanava rasta dama nud yata ratumasit tava vari patta nari sangame smaryamane bhavati mukha vikara stuti nistivanam cha. Translation. Since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing every new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with distaste. Unquote. Jamunacharya had formerly been a great king who enjoyed sexual happiness in various ways. But since he later engaged himself in the service of the Lord, he enjoyed spiritual bliss and hated to think of sex life. If sexual thoughts came to him, he would spit with disgust. So in these series of prayers by Prahlad Maharaj, after describing how he is completely, fully satisfied in himself and has no material hankering and is fixed on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and is praying for the deliverance of the fallen souls. Now he turns his attention to describe what the fallen souls are about. And that is, of course, sense gratification. This material world is made up of various types of sense gratification, which goes on in as pleasure. Material life means sensual pleasure, or the attempt to use the senses and the mind to find pleasure through the objects of the senses. This is material life, pretty much in essence, in various forms and in various arrangements and through various direct and indirect ways. Society is creating or trying to enjoy and then also try to create new facilities to do the same thing, and that is find some pleasure through the senses and the mind. But Bhagavad Gita, Krishna clearly explains in Bhagavad Gita in many places, but one verse, Yehi samsparsaja bhoga dukkha yona yevate avantavanta kunte anateshu ramate buddha. That Krishna is explaining that the contact with the senses and the sense objects are actually the opposite of what everyone is thinking. Rather than bringing pleasure, they bring misery. So what goes on or is accepted as pleasure is actually planting the seeds for misery. So therefore, when words like fools and rascals are used, they're actually praising these people. It's more like a praise, because it's a nice way of saying you're lost. Totally lost. And that is material life. And everyone's doing it. Everyone is doing, and everyone is not finding happiness. As it says here, Prahlad Maharaj, who understands how material world life works and understands how these conditioned souls are suffering, and says there's just bringing them the source of great distress. But people are tucham. I mean, they're attached. Attached to something that is totally insignificant. Prabhupada describes what is the happiness in this material world. Just a tiny little drop of what goes on is pleasure, but really is actually simply a relief from suffering, that's all. It's simply to live in the material body and to be in the material world means to be in a place of suffering. This place is a place of suffering. Prabhupada is explaining in one lecture that there's no happiness here. There's no happiness here. And devotees are asking various questions to try to present to Prabhupada different types of happiness. And Prabhupada is saying it's all suffering, it's all misery. We can see nobody is actually becoming happy. And then one devotee says, but Prabhupada, what about those in the mode of goodness? Aren't they experiencing happiness? Isn't there some happiness? Prabhupada said, one who comes to the mode of goodness is in knowledge. And that knowledge tells you there's no happiness. So this is the characteristic of the mode of goodness. One who really has these characteristics, that they understand that what goes on as happiness really is another form of suffering. That's all. Another form of suffering. But yet this is material life. Trying and trying and trying. Over and over again. Chewing the chewed. And this is also explained. And one tries to enjoy something, feels frustration and yet again tries to enjoy the same thing over and over again. Na pasyati. People see that I'm suffering and others are suffering, and yet and still they continue to do the same thing. Why? We might say they don't know anything else. Give them the benefit of the doubt. That much the materialists, we give them the benefit of the doubt. They don't know any other way to live, and therefore they continue fall into the same cycle of suffering and repeat it over and over again. But that is, Krishna hasn't left them in that situation. He's giving them the chance to get out, and that is devotional service. Here, this verse explains what is the epitome of material happiness and sex life. Actually, Prabhupada says that material world simply means sex life. It's called Maitunya Agra. Maitunya means sex life, and Agra means like chains. That Prabhupada explains that if one is locked up, sometimes they're locked up with chains and then they can't move, they're not free. But these chains in the material world, they're not what we say visible, not like material chains or metal chains. They're actually material desires, and the strongest of all that material desire is the attraction for the opposite sex for the purpose of enjoying sex life. And therefore everyone is working so hard and making so many arrangements for sex life. When Prabhupada was preaching in the early days of Krishna consciousness in New York City, he was speaking, you know, that there's no happiness here. One time one rock and roll group came to see Prabhupada. This is back in 1966. Really, in those days, the rock and roll groups were really much, in other words, just try something different. And they had all kinds of crazy songs. But this was one rock and roll group that in their lyrics, it was all about sex life. And somehow or other, they came to see Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada is explaining that you know, the sex life is suffering. So one of them says that it's better to die than not to have sex life. Death is a better alternative. And Prabhupada was shocked to hear such things. And people are actually saying that without that feature of material enjoyment, there's no purpose to life. So what is the use of even living? And really, that's more or less a declaration for society at large. Because everything is based and centered around that principle. Because material life really culminates in this principle of sex life. But where does that desire come from? Actually, Prabhupada explains this, that desire to enjoy the opposite sex in this way is found also within the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when Krishna wants to enjoy, it's nothing material. And when he wants to enjoy, he uses his internal energy. Prabhupada, he creates a woman, then Prabhupada writes that woman is Radharani. And then, of course, that principle is there within the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, when Prabhupada was saying that the attraction between man and woman is actually natural. It's natural. Why? Because it's in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But it's in a perverted reflection of its original, pure, pristine love that has become diverted to the material energy in the form of trying to enjoy something that cannot be enjoyed, which is temporary. But everyone is doing it, and no one is feeling satisfied by that. Nowadays, in today's society, you know, who are the gurus? The gurus who propound various forms of material happiness in the form of sex desire. When Prabhupada was preaching in the early days also, Brahmananda Prabhu, He was explaining that when he was going to school, he had one professor who was a Freudian professor, who was teaching the principles of Freud. And Freud, his concept, or his misconception, was that everything is simply centered around the principle of sex. He saw everything. He could connect any gesture, any activity, any form of movement to some aspect of sex life. That's all. And when Brahmananda explained that to Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, "Your professor's right." That yes, this is the nature of the material world. Actually. But of course, Freud was he was later shown to be quite insane. He actually died in a form of insanity. His character in his life was really very degraded. He actually took up using cocaine, and he just later died of insanity. So these are the gurus of today's society, those who propound various forms of sex life as the ultimate principle. Here we find that one who takes to Krishna consciousness. But let's go back a little bit. How hard it is to give up this desire for sex enjoyment? Prabhupada writes in the Srimad Bhagavatam that many persons, this is in the first canto, second chapter, verse number 17 in the purport, Prabhupada writes in this purport that many, many who are on the path of spiritual life, who have risen very high in their spiritual life, still somehow or other become victimized by this attraction to the opposite sex and become, what we say, fall down. And I'm not speaking just, when we speak the opposite sex, we're not just speaking woman. As Prabhupada explains, the term woman refers to, for a man, woman is woman, and for a woman, man is woman. The woman, the word woman, actually refers to the opposite sex. That's actually in Srimad Bhagavatam. So from either side, we can look at it and see that attraction becomes a stumbling block for many. And Prabhupada explained that there's only one way one can free themselves ultimately from that desire completely. Because as we make progress in spiritual life, we develop a higher taste. And as that higher taste develops, one becomes more and more free from the attraction of this material world. But still, residues of our past experiences lie deep within the subconscious. And still, under certain circumstances, one again can find themselves victimized by being a little inattentive in their day-to-day activities. And so therefore one should never, never consider themselves free from this attraction. If you consider yourself free from this attraction, if you actually are free from that attraction, you're on the highest platform of spiritual life. Because we see, even up to the platform of bhava, which is the preliminary platform of prema, which is pure love of God, one still may be victimized by that. We have so many. Subari Muni, he was meditating underwater for so long and just happened to see two fishes engaged in sexual intercourse. And what happened? He became attracted. He was a great Muni. And he had such powers. And he was meditating for a long time underwater. Just imagine, just to meditate, but underwater. How adept one has to be in the yoga system in order to perform that. How difficult it is to control the mind and senses. He had mastered that. But still, just by seeing fish, not even what we say human forms, fish, he became attracted, and again, he became victimized, and he wound up, taking up, married life again. And we have, again, the example of Lord Brahma. How Lord Brahma Lord Brahma is the CEO of the universe, right? He's the most exalted within the universe. In fact, his position is that he actually creates the forms within the material energy by the power of Krishna's mercy given to him in his form of his devotional service. But still, we see in one example, apparently, now this is a very, what we say, point of discussion. Can Brahma become victimized by sex life? It's in the third canto. It's described how he became attracted to his own daughter. And eventually, because of that, he had to give up that body. Prabhupada explains giving up that body means giving up that mentality. That he had to give up that mentality. But Prabhupada goes on to explain that Lord Brahma shouldn't be seen as one, as an ordinary conditioned soul who was victimized by the opposite sex. But somehow or other, that example is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada explains that just see, even Lord Brahma, what to speak of us. What to speak of us. So it's a message for those who may think that they are free from this desire or this attraction. Just to give us a warning that at any time, even one who is practicing Krishna consciousness very carefully and with a little inattention can again be victimized. So you have to be very, very careful. How powerful this force is, and how all-pervading, especially in today's world, right? The billboards, the magazines, the newspapers, the media, everything centers around making that act or that performance a glorious occasion, right? If they want to sell a product, right, what do? They try to advertise the product by creating some kind of sensual attraction centered around the opposite sex, right? I remember Radhanath Maharaj was telling one time when I think he was in New Vrindavan many years ago. He was doing some ordinary work, laying tiles. So he had to go to one store to buy some glue to put the glue down, and then you lay the tiles on the glue. So he went to the hardware store where they sell the glue. So he was looking for that type of glue, and he saw that there were so many different brands of the same thing, all tile glue. So he decided to go to the proprietor and ask, well, which one is the best? And the proprietor said, well, actually, they're all the same, pretty much. But this is the one everyone buys. And he showed him on the can, there was a lady, she was not dressed very nicely. And this, because of this picture, this is the one that is the biggest seller. So this is the most popular brand. So they use that type of attraction to get people to buy things. And so this is the material world. So one has to be very, very careful to avoid the pitfalls of this. A Jamunacharya is mentioned here as one who has given it all up. But what was his history prior to that? He actually was a great devotee. By one debate, he won the kingdom, and he became a king. And he enjoyed royal happiness in the form of, as Prabhupada says, various types of sexual activities. And became so degraded that he practically gave up all of his... No, not practically, he did. He gave up all of his previous activities in devotional activities and just became a degraded king. Somehow, by the mercy of his spiritual master, who made an arrangement to bring him back, he came. And again took up devotional service. Now he's explaining that when I think of sex life, it becomes disgusting. He's no longer attracted to that. Why? Because he's fully absorbed and attracted to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotional service. So this is the, what we say, the success of freeing oneself from the entanglement of material life. And one has to be fully absorbed in devotional service. Krishna is called Madan Mohan. Madan Mohan is that one who is attracting that person who is attracting everyone. Cupid is called Madan. There's actually a demigod whose name was Madan. And his service, or you might say, depends on how you look at it, service or disservice, is to somehow enhance or to stimulate that attraction in various ways. Now that Madan, Krishna is called Madan Mohan, that means he can attract that person who attracts everyone. So therefore, in order to become free from Madan, one has to take shelter of Madan Mohan, the detractor of Cupid. And when one develops their attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotional service, then one gradually loses their attraction for this material world. But never consider yourself safe. Never consider yourself safe. Because only when that attraction becomes what we say 24/7, as they say. 24, that means when one is fully absorbed in the lotus feet of the Lord in devotional service, then one is fully on the spiritual platform. But still, even one who is fully on the spiritual platform never does anything to somehow or other allow oneself to slip in devotional service. Because one can, again, be victimized simply by a little inattention. When inattention is there, then one can be victimized again. And one can again take up what we call material life. And there are so many, many examples how one can become again victimized. So this happiness in the material world, epitomized by sex life, is compared to an itch. And here, Prahlad Maharaj gives the formula that one has to tolerate the itching. Just like when you have an itch. The tendency is, it's almost natural to want to scratch it, right? Today I was chanting japa, and I was feeling some itch. And so I was disturbing my japa, so I was scratching every once in a while. And I was thinking, boy, this is just in line with the verse. I have to speak on this verse, so I better tolerate this itching. So it's like that, because when one tolerates difficulties, after a while, the toleration brings about a lessening of that difficulty, and actually after sometimes it goes away. So as we tolerate this itch, and that's what it is, it's simply an itch. It comes and it goes. When it comes, we think, oh, this is it. We become so absorbed in the moment. And we forget that, we forget past and present, right? We forget past and future, I'm saying. Sorry. And we get so absorbed in the moment. But one has to realize that it's all temporary. There's one story where one king, he was a powerful king, and he was thinking, you know, I would like something that I don't have. He had everything. He was powerful. Prabhupada tells this story. He had everything. And he was thinking, what don't I have? I know. I would like to have something that when I feel happy, it makes me sad, and when I feel sad, it makes me happy. It changes my mood completely. So he called his ministers and he told them his desire, and he asked them to come up with something. So the ministers were baffled. But one minister was very intelligent. He said, "All right, King, tomorrow I'll have it for you." So the next day he returned and he had a ring. And on the ring there was an inscription. So he gave it to the king. He said, "When you feel happy, you simply read this inscription and it'll change your mood. And when you feel sad, it'll change it the other way." And then on the ring there was four words. Simple. "This soon will end. This soon will end." So it's like that. Material life is like that. So the itching comes, it goes. You simply tolerate it, that's all. You have to tolerate it. And that's what material life is about. The practice of life is about, is learning how to tolerate difficulties. Not only tolerating difficulties, but tolerating the good times too. The apparent niceties of the material world that presents itself as some type of happiness. To tolerate that too, because it's another form of illusion. It's another form of illusion. So this desire to satisfy the senses, which is epitomized by sex life, is simply a itch, as it's described here by Prahlad Maharaj. But that itch becomes so strong. Sometimes when you don't scratch the itch, it increases. And even more and more sometimes. And then you start scratching and scratching and scratching. And then you scratch so much it starts to bleed, right? Then it becomes painful. And that's what happens in material life. As one satisfies this itch, one becomes more and more implicated in the suffering that material desire brings. And we see the greatest source of material suffering centers around that. Broken families, single parents, abortion, diseases, broken relationships. Everything centers around some kind of frustrated sex life. Right? Because sex life always winds up with some type of frustration. It always brings about frustration. Because you can't find happiness in that. But the drive and the power is so strong sometimes that people lose all their intelligence and can't think clearly about what to do. And all they can think is to satisfy that desire. But a devotee knows that it's simply a feature of material existence and one has to tolerate and absorb oneself in devotional service. As we tolerate it more and more, we gradually become free from the effect. And as one performs devotional service and develops their attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then that natural propensity to satisfy the senses in relationship to the material energy becomes diverted, where Krishna provides the complete form of sense happiness. The senses become enlivened and engaged in devotional service. All the senses become fully satisfied when one is fully engaged in devotional service. And that is what is called transcendental happiness, or what is the actual really happiness. The senses don't become stopped, they become purified. And that natural desire, to love the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes experienced by way of engaging in devotional service. So here Prahlad Maharaj is teaching that the greatest of all happiness that people are almost chasing after is simply an itch that causes distress. He sums up the material happiness in a very simplified way. It's simply an itch, and it just causes distress. No one becomes happy by this. In fact, everyone becomes more and more miserable simply by that. The most miserable people are the people who are more or less absorbed in that type of happiness. They can't give it up, but at the same time, they're never finding any satisfaction in that. So one has to take the devotional service and experience real transcendental pleasure in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By chanting the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Kevala Ananda Kanda, Sixth Stride. This is real transcendental pleasure. The happiness that one experiences by glorifying the Lord by chanting His holy name. And one forgets about this material happiness. And this is devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But one has to be very, very careful to keep oneself always connected to the spiritual energy. A little inattention in devotional service, again, one can be victimized by the material world. And one might say, well, it won't happen to me. I'm very careful. Don't think like that. There's too many examples of that. How one becomes victimized by the material energy. So, never consider yourself safe. And one who never considers themselves safe, what is their understanding? They're always taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. They're always taking shelter of the association of devotees. They're always taking shelter of the process of devotional service. And then one, that is the platform of safety. And one is fixed on that platform. Then even when Maya comes along to attract, one will not be attracted because one has developed a higher taste. Visayan binivartante niharasya dehinam raso varjam vasopyasya param jusran nivartante. That only by tasting the higher taste can one give up the lower taste. So we want that higher taste. That's Krishna consciousness. Any questions? Comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hi.
When we say that we should take shelter of the process of devotional service, the holy name, what do you actually mean by taking shelter? What is the
shelter means complete. If you're engaged in some activity, but your mind is somewhere else, then you're not fully taking shelter. It's like if you're sitting here, but you're not listening to class. You're just here. And once in a while you tune in and then you tune out again. It means you're not really taking shelter, and you're in and out, you know, it's flickering. So when you're out, you're not safe, because the mind can go anywhere. The mind can take you to, you know, Patala Loka, to Swarga Loka, and in between, anywhere. It can take you to Chaupati Beach, it can take you anywhere. So the mind also should follow or be the source of leading the senses and keeping the senses and the mind connected to the process of devotional activity. Keep your mind focused. The mind has to be focused. So controlling the mind is a very constant practice. As Krishna explains when he answers Arjuna's question, not Arjuna's questions, Arjuna's doubt. Arjuna has a doubt. When Krishna is explaining the process of controlling the mind, Arjuna says, you're asking something impossible. He thinks that to control the mind is like controlling the wind, he says. It's difficult, it's obstinate, turbulent, unsteady. It's like the wind. And Krishna says, yes, you're right. But he says, by constant practice and by detaching one from sense gratification, one can control the restless mind. So the word constant is used. Constant means not just when it's easy. Just like when we sit down to chant japa, you know, sometimes we think, oh, I'm okay, but then you sit down to chant japa, then the mind goes, whew, goes, travels all over the universe, right? It's just, as soon as you really try to make an effort to control that mind says, no way, I got my program. And so you have to really struggle to bring that mind into control many times. Sometimes it's not so hard, and sometimes it's impossible. And that's the nature of the mind. So, here, but when the times are like that, when it's very difficult, then one should not give up and think it's just too difficult. So one has to always be diligent to control the mind and keep the mind connected to the spiritual process. So mind, body, words. That's full shelter. If you're looking at the taking darshan of the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but your mind is somewhere else, your eyes are just gazing, but your mind is, that means you're really not there. You have to bring that mind to the object of devotion. You can do that by different ways, by offering prayers, by praying to the Lord to help bring your mind to His lotus feet. So we have to practice. But it becomes easier when we start giving up sense gratification. As long as we still have a desire for sense gratification, it's practically impossible. It is impossible to control the mind. Because those desires will again lead you to fulfill those desires. So although we say, fix the mind, control the mind, as long as the tendency for sense gratification still remains within the consciousness, it's practically impossible to control the mind. So therefore, that's why Krishna says, we have to practice this constantly and detach ourselves from the material. And association with those who are absorbed in Krishna consciousness gives us the inspiration and the enthusiasm and the example which is necessary for helping us to practice successfully. Always look for, take shelter of that type of association to get inspired. Sometimes when we have difficulty, we think, I should just be by myself or go away. And that's a natural tendency sometimes. But when we have difficulty, or we should actually look for the opportunity to get some help, take shelter, get some good association, bring our mind back. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, okay.
Anyone else? Yes, Vijay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. What can we do to deal with our past impressions?
What can we do to
deal with our past impressions?
Our
past impressions?
Past impressions. Past impressions? You mean as they appear within the mind?
Yeah.
How to deal with the past impressions that come within the mind?
Because they seem to kind of percolate up.
Yeah, don't dwell on them. Whatever you think of, you feed. Whether you feed it by thinking negatively or positively, you feed it. Negative thought about a negative thought increases that negative thought. Therefore, it's mentioned that when these past impressions appear within the mind, and they're going to, because as long as consciousness is there, the subtle body releases the unconscious mind releases to the conscious mind past and present impressions. But just dismiss them by absorbing oneself in something spiritual. I remember when I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, one devotee was preaching like that to me. He said, if you don't kill the mind will kill you. Don't think about these things, he says. And, you know, it was one of the first instructions I ever got when I was, you know, a bhakta. I was just, you know, visiting the New York temple and just doing some menial service. And I had a good bhakta leader. He says, if you don't kill those thoughts in your mind, it'll kill you. So, and he was very forceful in explaining this point. So it made an impression on me that these negative thoughts we should try to just push it out. Thinking, feeling, and willing. What is it? Dayato visayam pumsam teshu sangat sanjayate, sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha vijayate, krodha bhavati sammohan, sammoham shriti brihvama, shriti brahmsa burinasa, burinasa panashyati. Panashyati means again fall down. So contemplating the objects of the senses, even on the subtle level, even if the sense objects are not visible in front of you, if you contemplate them in your mind, you develop an attraction. And from that attraction, lust, and from lust, the mind becomes deluded and bewildered, and again one falls down into the material consciousness again. So thinking, feeling, and willing. Stop it at the thinking stage. As soon as it gets to the feeling stage, it becomes strong. And then from the feeling stage, it goes to the willing stage, and one is forced to act by saying something or doing something. So catch it on the thinking stage. That's all. And replace it with something Krishna conscious. That's what it means to practice devotional service. You can't be relaxed. If you're relaxed, you go downstream. It's Prabhupada used to say, when you take up spiritual life, you're declaring war on Maya. And war means a fight. Maya is saying, oh, this person wants to escape. Oh, okay, let me do whatever I can to keep him or her from escaping. So pretty soon, you know, pretty soon you're in Krishna consciousness for 10 years and you meet your old girlfriend again. Your old boyfriend, right? And then what do you do? Oh, nice knowing you. It's like that. I know one sannyasi. He was in, I won't mention his name, he was practicing for 30 years. And before then he was married. And he left his married life, and at one point when he left, his wife had a little child. She was a little girl. So he left that whole thing, took sannyas, joined the Hare Krishna movement. And 30 years later, he meets his daughter. She finds her father after 30 years. You know. So all of a sudden, he's meeting his daughter again after 30 years. He never saw her his whole life. He left that situation when she was like 2 or 3 years old. And he's practicing sannyas. And she wants to know all about her father. So he was put into a very, what we say, interesting situation. I don't have much of a purport of what happened, but it's maybe to some, it's still going on to some degree. That is, he started to preach to her. He saw her as simply as an object of compassion to preach to her and try to help her. But then, you know, when it first came, here was his daughter. She wants to know her father after not seeing her father for so many years. And now he's a sannyasi in the Hare Krishna movement. So these things can happen, you know. And all of a sudden, one's past life again appears, either in the, what we say, physical sense or in the subtle sense. The mind again starts, you know, coming. And so, in one lecture, Prabhupada says, never trust your mind. Always distrust. Mm-hmm. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, your mind is a non-devotee. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is very clear in making his points. Your mind is a non-devotee. So if you associate with a non-devotee, that's not so good. We're supposed to associate with devotees. So you have to make your mind a devotee. So he wants to make you a non-devotee. So you have to make him a devotee. So, and that's, the mind is a composite of all past impressions, experiences, activities that we had since we've, you know, taken on a material body for so many lives. So that's why the process of very Krishna consciousness is very carefully executed. It's like shaving with a razor, Prabhupada said. A little inattention and one again becomes victimized. Mm-hmm. But the process is powerful. If we take shelter of Krishna's holy name, chant the holy names of the Lord and engage in devotional service, and then we can make nice progress towards the goal of life and develop our natural attraction for Krishna. Says that one who meditates on the lotus-like eyebrows of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and becomes attracted to the Lord never becomes victimized by the opposite sex. Krishna's eyebrows are like powerful arrows, and his eyes are like the arrows, and his eyebrows are like the bow. So when Krishna glances at the aspiring devotee who meditates on his lotus-like eyebrows, then they can destroy all conceptions of attractions to this ephemeral material world. Because when you actually analyze it in reality, what is attractive at one point becomes, as time goes on, changes. Time changes that attraction. So it's all temporary. And a devotee doesn't want to get attracted to something ultimately that is going to change, because then one becomes, disappointed. So any happiness that one tries to find in this material world ultimately leads to disappointment and frustration. Any other questions? Yes. The microphone is on its way. Yes.
If we are careless, we will again become a victim. And if we are attracted to the Lord, then we will not become a victim. So as a devotee, whenever we are distracted by such material desires, is it due to offenses always? Because we have heard that Krishna himself plants material desires if we offend, even in the
When you can again become attracted to the material energy, is it due to offenses?
Is it always due to offenses? Because as a devotee, we are sometimes not attracted and suddenly some desires come.
Well, I can say one thing, that by committing offenses, one loses their taste, because Krishna doesn't tolerate offenses, and therefore one gradually loses their taste. The process of becoming degraded is the process of first you commit offenses, and then you no longer see the happiness of Krishna consciousness, and you start looking for happiness somewhere else in the material energy. So it can be like that, but it's not necessarily in all cases. It's not necessary in all cases. It's just the natural tendency that one will can be just attracted just because of that attraction by that sense object. It doesn't mean it was due to offenses. It's just that unless one is fully absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the tendency for that attraction can happen again. That's the power of material energy. Krishna says that, just see the power of my maya in the form of a woman. And even the greatest of all conquerors, you know, those who have conquered nations. It's like, what was that famous conqueror? Alexander the Great. You know, he had conquered so much, but then it explains that when he was with his consorts, he was conquered. So, the power of Maya should never be on. So therefore, one should be conscious and cautious. Conscious of Krishna and cautious not to become, again, victimized with material energy. Just be careful, that's all. If one starts to see themselves becoming, again, attracted or victimized, then don't allow that to continue. Do something. Think of Krishna or get out of there fast. Don't try to be a hero. Too many dead heroes. So, you know, we just... Sometimes I know people say, oh yes, this person that I'm attracted to, we were eternal associates in our last life. So we're just picking up our relationship in this life, that's all. It has nothing to do with anything material, it's all spiritual. You know, the mind can create all kinds of things like that, you know. Even if it's true, still, it's not important. It's not important. Maya is, whatever tricks you think you know to defeat Maya, Maya's got more tricks ready to show you. You don't know all her tricks yet. She's full of tricks. So, the safe process is to always think of Krishna. That's the safe. Always think of Krishna. And always realize that one is in a vulnerable situation. When you think you're safe, that's an indication you're about to slip. I think that's where the devotees really fall. When we think we're okay, I've made enough advancement, I'm not victimized, I passed through so many tests, I'm okay, and it's not going to happen to me, and don't worry, I don't have to worry, and get a little careless. Then we don't see the need to take shelter. But a devotee knows, just like the great souls, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying, you know. You know, what is it? Amar jivan sade pape rate, nahi opolera desa. That my life is simply sinful. I'm just covered. I'm honeycombed with so many faults. Lust and pride, false pride and so many things. And in that mood, he's teaching that one always takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One always sees themselves. He says, even great souls, they act like ordinary conditioned souls, both to teach and to practice. Of course, they're fixed on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they never consider themselves like that power of their own devotion is coming from them. They realize as soon as they leave the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, then Maya is there. Maya is there. So the safe thing is always remember Krishna by chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you.